Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet and Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. The three major candidates for the U.S. Senate face off at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce this Monday. Paul, how'd it go?
It went pretty well. Nobody threw any pies. Nobody yelled at anybody. It was a pretty even-handed kind of get-together. They talked about health care, terrorism, the debt, spending, that sort of thing. They presented, I thought, a very distinct difference between each of the three candidates. Health care, we don't need to privatize it, or we do need to privatize it, and that sort of thing. It doesn't need to be taken away. It needs to be fixed, and on and on. I thought they did very well, all of them.
Steve?
Yep, I think so. They all held their own. Nobody got the better of anyone else. But I do think Scott McAdams, the Democrat in the race, scored some points with the crowd there in the room. He got at least three times where there were people applauding what he said. I think it was more than supporters. Each candidate in the room had their own little batch of supporters there.
But you could tell that the applause all came from distinct areas.
Yeah, one corner area.
Pods,
this was pretty
so
widespread. Yeah, so he did really well. I think people were surprised that he is a strong candidate and can't be taken.
Well, didn't it strike you that his job there was to exceed expectations?
Yeah,
and he worked the room right at the beginning.
He did, and I think he did exceed expectations for folks. And I just thought, like, oh my God, the guy's smarter than I thought. It's not like that. I think people just don't know him outside of Southeast Alaska for the most part, or outside of even Sitka. So he really, I think, played well to the crowd. I think people really liked what he had to say, and I think he came out. If I had to score it, I'd give him a slight edge over the other two candidates.
And wouldn't you say also that Miller made something of the opportunity he had? I mean, there were probably some people there that didn't know him except maybe what they read in the paper or saw on television.
Yeah.
He was able to show them, look, I'm in some measure a classic pro-business Republican.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he was able to score some points that way too. There were a couple of things that he said that didn't play well with the crowd. The Jim DeMint, there was one of the questions that's asked the candidates, who in Congress do you admire? Who do you consider a mentor? Who do you look up to? And there's a couple of, oh, gee whiz, I don't really look up to anybody or whatever type. All three. Lisa Murkowski pointed out to Ted Stevens. She said that Ted Stevens was always her mentor, and she learned
McAdams a deal. Pointed to John Tester of Montana, a country boy like me who...
Yeah, Montana. There was a senator from Vermont that he liked, and I can't remember. There was a third state that he pointed out. And then Joe Miller said Jim DeMint, and that... back in the corner of the room certainly brought a few groans there. So that was one point that probably didn't go over real well with the crowd. But for the most part, yeah, I think if this was the first time that Joe Miller was exposed to the business community there, I think he did very well, as did Lisa Murkowski. Nobody lost it, but...
Before we move on, we need to comment on this. I thought Miller had a very good performance for what he needed to do. Mm-hmm. Then he holds a press conference and announces, I'm not talking to the press. Paul, explain this. Or I'm not talking to the press anymore about what I regard as personal matters.
Talk about my history. Yeah. Candidates perceive they're having difficulty with the media. The first thing they do is blame the media for their difficulties. And then beyond that, they simply try to button up. Do the rope-a-dope, get in the corner, hope they don't hurt me too bad for the next couple of weeks. And when people advise candidates to do that, you're left to wonder, what are they thinking?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you might as well slap them in the face with a fish or wave a red flag. The media is not going to go home.
15 yards for taunting.
That's exactly right. And it leaves a lot of questions unanswered, and it leaves people free then to ask the question, what's he hiding?
Well, let's move on to that, Steve. This was complicated. The question is about Joe Miller's employment records.
Right,
I don't think there's been very much interest in his family records. And then this was complicated for Miller, or compounded by former Mayor Jim Whitaker of the Fairbanks North Star Borough coming forward and saying, I was the mayor, I know what happened, and it isn't pretty.
Right. there have been a number of, quite a few news organizations that have been trying to get Joe Miller's personnel file from the North Star Borough when he worked for the borough a few years back. And there was a file that was released, but it was heavily redacted. A lot of information not there, a lot of...
That means blacked out.
Those yeah, we didn't get the stuff that we were hoping for. Jim Whitaker steps forward, gives an interview with the Anchorage Daily News Minor and
the Fairbanks Daily News Minor
and Anchorage Daily News, and the Alaska Dispatch also got some information that it published, and it said basically that Miller was disciplined for allegedly using several computers, state-owned computers, to work against to work for the ouster of Republican Party Chief Randy Friedrich. Whitaker said that after he heard the news conference on Monday in Anchorage that Miller wasn't going to be talking to the media anymore about personal matters, that he felt that he had to step forward and fill in those blanks. He said that he had been suspended without pay because of the use of these computers, and said that he had worked to try and get Friedrich ousted. There have been a number of people, including Randy Friedrich, who've come to the aid of Joe Miller and saying, you know, well, this just didn't happen. You know, and some of the things that Whitaker put out there have been countered by Randy Friedrich, including an interview that we did with Randy Friedrich a couple of days ago.
That's would summarize what he said?
Pretty much. Yeah, just, you know, they were talking about trying to vote by proxy, and that's what Whitaker had alleged here, trying to line up proxy votes, I think is how it went. And Randy Friedrich
says— This is the real inside baseball.
This is real inside baseball. And Friedrich says, I've been affiliated with the Republican Party in Alaska for 25 years, and we don't do that. We don't have votes by proxy. So he kind of went point by point, and yeah, it was inside baseball kind of stuff, and tried to refute.
Let's get Paul back in here. Paul, the Alaska Dispatch, as of Friday morning, the Alaska Dispatch and the Fairbanks Daily News Minor have lawyers. They've gone to court to get those records open so that the public can see them. Where is this story headed?
Well, it depends on what's in those records. I think when those records are made public, we'll see for sure then what the real story is. Dermot Cole of the News Miner at one point said that, you know, he could have released anything he wanted to release at any time. And I think that's a good point. There's a reason it's not being released. I think we're going to find out why. These kinds of things that generally come to no good end. I mean, even if he comes out of this okay, there's the stigma behind of he's ducking and dodging again. So I don't know.
Don't you wonder at some point if this is really going to hurt him, that there's a group of people who are going to stick with him? And
Well, I think if you support Joe Miller, this is nonsense. If you're kind of, well, I don't know about this guy, this could hurt him.
Okay. I always
kind of shake my head over these kinds of things is that, you know, the candidates will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on campaign ads and literature to tell you about their background and why their background makes them qualified to take an office, to hold office, you know. And, okay, well, then we have some other questions about your background, you know. And we're not going to talk about that part of the background.
Well,
we're going to hide that part.
He tried to say that they were personal matters. Yeah. They're professional matters of his performance.
It shows how he conducted himself while holding down a public job.
Right. Okay. Well, let's move along. The McAdams people say they've got McMentum, not just McAdams. Paul, do they?
Well, they're picking up money. They've picked up a good deal of money in the last month and a half or so. I think $685,000, something like that.
Which That's quite a
bad.
Bit of money in a
That's
short time.
That's not bad. Yeah. That's not bad. I think Lisa Murkowski, in about the same time, picked up $350,000 or so, but she started off with $1 million in the bank, so it's not huge. But if you start looking at poll numbers, he was 27% and 35-35 for the other two. Rasmussen puts him at 27, with 35-34, with Miller out front in both of those. There's not much air in this campaign for Mr. McAdams. There's just a lot of the interest, a lot of the money is going to the other two candidates. Alaska's a conservative state. I think a statewide candidate that garners 40% of the vote in this state, a Democrat, is doing very, very well. I don't see him going much above 27 to 30%, but he might. Who knows? The miracles happen. The electorate
Paul,
says,
isn't one of the things that's going on here all of the candidates are in some way flawed. McAdams, because
people
don't know him.
That's right.
Miller, because of much we've heard about his background. And Murkowski, because she lost the primary
primary, and Republicans will say, well, she's too liberal. You could make a case against any one of them. I think,
and it's being done.
It's being done even as we speak. Right. But I think McAdams has the more difficult problem in that they're going to attack. They don't have much of a record to attack, so they're going to attack his lack of experience.
Well, that's what I wondered
about. And he
about,
can't
about
guard against
Steve
that.
Is, at some point here, Lisa Murkowski's got to realize, I got to get some more votes, and the most likely place I'll get them is from McAdams. How do you proceed in that case?
Well, you kind of saw that a little bit in that Monday debate, where she would go after Miller a little bit, but when the candidates got an opportunity to ask one another questions, I was surprised. I thought she'd have a big loaded for bear question for Joe Miller. Nope, it was for McAdams. So I think she's done some of that. There's a kind of an exchange that's going on in emails this morning, on Friday morning as we tape this, where the Murkowski camp is attacking McAdams. McAdams actually threw the first punch in this encounter, and it was over their claim that Lisa Murkowski has not supported women who have been victims of domestic violence, and so now they've turned around and they said that that's not true, and they've pointed out point for point how she has appropriated money in federal spending bills to help shelters and things like that and help victims. So that's going on. I think McAdams also looks at it that he's got to, she's going to probably pull a lot from the middle, and that's where his support's got to come from
this
as well.
The competition.
So they're both going for each other's piece of the pie.
We may
right
come back
now
to this if we have enough time. But sure. Paul, real quick, then we need to go on to the governor's race.
Well, Steve kind of touched on it. The Democratic voters in the state are the fertile field for both of these people. Mm-hmm. If the Democrats can be convinced, McAdams has got a shot, we'll stay with him, that's one thing. But if they're convinced he's not going to get much above 27%, one of the other two is going to win, they want Murkowski to win. So that's where they'll go.
There was a great line in the town hall meeting that McAdams held a little bit earlier this week. He says, if we can hold the Democrats together, and if we can get the same number of votes as Democrats who have lost in the past in a two-way race, we'll win this thing by a landslide. So he's trying to get to that 45-47.
The Beasley vote.
Yeah. A little higher than the Beasley line. There's the Mendoza line in baseball.
The Beasley
a little higher
line.
Than
okay.
the Beasley.
Beasley's permanent contribution to our language. Paul, let's go back to the governor's race. It's important that we do. It seems Ethan Berkowitz certainly is vigorous. There's no question about that. Is he making any progress with his vigor and rigor?
Well, yeah, he is. One of the latest polls shows a 9 or 10 point spread. But there's
that's the one I saw the other day.
Yeah,
Thank you.
You go back to and this race has been kind of strange. July 53-34 Parnell. September 2nd, 53-43. September 2nd, 53-43. September 22nd, 54-31. Huffington Post on the 10th, a few days back, has got it 51-42. And then we show it moving up. It's probably stayed about the same today. Real Clear Politics on the 9th had it 54-38. Another one had it at 20 points about 2 weeks ago. So I don't know. I think he is. I think he's stampeding towards the center, and he keeps offering this Alaskan program thing, which is really kind of appealing.
Well, he's certainly figured out, as we've discussed here before,
exactly
how to get free media. He's
That's
done
exactly
a really good
right.
job on that.
That's really good.
And you have to think, at some point, this would kind of tighten up because he's well-known. He's been around the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's another thing, too. Parnell, I'm sure he's campaigning. I don't know where.
Well, let's let Steve explain this to us then. Steve.
Well, I think that you just hit it. I mean, you've got so much Berkowitz on the air, and he's very active, and he's got good media, and he's, you want to buy a lifetime, honey license and some really good ideas and great programs, and he's created the buzz. And whatever Sean Parnell's doing pales by comparison, but he's still ahead in the polls, and I'm still thinking that the strategy is, again, I'm not going to stick my head up out of the foxhole to present a target. I'm going to go on being governor and just act gubernatorial here. And
hiya, fella.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Sign a few proclamations and do really good things and kiss some babies.
Okay. President Obama lifts the offshore oil drilling ban. Paul, Steve, let's start with you. What does this mean for Alaska immediately?
Nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, really nothing. And everybody's kind of wondering why. It really doesn't do anything for Alaska. This this affects the wells that are drilled in about 5,000 feet of water in the Gulf of Mexico. Those were mothballed after the Deepwater Horizon spill. And
so it means a bunch of people or a large group of people, workers in the Gulf states, can go back to work?
Right, and not immediately, but I think it's kind of a phase-in kind of thing as people can start up. But yeah, it is good. It is very good news for the folks in the Gulf because they say they've been victims of kind of a double hit here. They've had this horrible spill that they've had to contend with and the impact on their economy and their beaches and their way of life. And then a lot of the people who depended on the rigs for their livelihood, they lost their jobs basically. So this is good news for the folks who are dependent on those jobs in the Gulf. For Alaska, though, Secretary Salazar just said, no, we're proceeding very cautiously on these decisions affecting the Arctic waters. And
this could affect the companies, Shell in particular, planning, but they're not doing anything in the next month.
No, and they need to know by December in order to start to determine what they're going to do up there in the Beaufort. I think they've pretty much said, we're not going to do anything with Chukchi next year, but I think...
Yeah, they said that.
Yeah, but the Beaufort, that depends on how soon the federal government, the Obama administration acts on that moratorium.
And Paul, what can you add to what our friend Steve just had to say?
Well, this lifting the moratorium, if you will, has allowed Obama to just have it both ways. He says he's lifting the moratorium, but now each company wants to drill in the Gulf of Mexico has to apply, and they have to prove they can jump the bar, a much higher bar, for safety precautions, that sort of thing. People down in the Louisiana area and Gulf of Mexico are calling a de facto a moratorium. It's incredibly tough to get the application through to do the drilling. Then there's all kinds of other politics. Senator Landrieu, I guess, out of Louisiana is kind of deal with Obama's choice of budget chief, and she's angry with them, and there's all kinds of things going on. Mostly, they say what they did this for, a lot of pundits are saying, is that it gets Obama through the elections without having to deal with this.
Okay, speaking of the elections, when Alaska voters go to the polls, they will be asked to vote on a constitutional amendment, Paul, to change the size of the legislature. Unfortunately, there's been almost no public debate or discussion of
Isn't
this.
That strange?
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about, first, what would happen? And
It would expand the size of the House by 4 and the size of the Senate by 2 to make up for a loss or an increase, I guess, in population in urban areas. It would kind of equalize the power throughout the state. It's going to turn out rural Alaska by the tons for this election. So what it will mean in the long run, I don't know. I don't know if you just equalize the power where it is now, things don't change, which I don't.
Well, probably
I'm not
two
sure.
of these House seats will go to the Mattsu Valley.
Right.
So the other
the
two
most
will
popular
be...
areas. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not Southeast. Southeast will probably lose. Right.
We don't know.
I would think South Central would get
South Central,
like you said, the Valley. And I think the Anchorage area might get something as well. It's grown.
How do you expect a public that has not heard a vigorous debate on this question to respond?
No. Well, yeah, vote no. Yeah, I think when anybody's confused about things, they vote no on these things. It's like, what do they want to do? And, you know, and right now, and this is going to sound so flippant, frivolous, I'm sorry, but you know, the prevailing feeling out there is like, I really am so mad at Congress, I'm so mad at the legislature, now I want more of these guys? No, I'm going to vote no. Hopefully people wouldn't equate it with that. But I think if they don't know, I think that's the rule of thumb. If people don't know, if people are confused, they vote no.
They need to sell it. There's no doubt about that.
And Paul, I mean, this frequently we use as a metaphor, figure of speech, people talking about big government. Mm-hmm. But this would be literally a question of making your government bigger.
Bigger. That means more staff, more logistics, more everything. And unless they can sell this to the Alaska public, the Alaska voter, that this is a great thing and we should do this, they're going to have a real difficult time with it.
What's the stuff like? We've talked about this with other propositions before that have been either on the municipal ballot or the statewide ballot. They may be somewhat controversial. You know, people, oh, this is a good idea. Let's put it on the ballot. But then nobody takes ownership of it. Nobody goes out to campaign for it. And nobody tells the people why it is good. It's up to us here in the media to kind of lay all the points, good and bad, and let people make up their own minds. But if they're going to, if they think it's important enough to place on the ballot, somebody needs to advocate for it or at least get out there, and besides the voter pamphlet that we're all starting to receive in our mails, and tell the folks what it's about, what it's going to do.
It's odd about this. Even when that was being debated in the legislature, you know, and there was kind of a fracas a little bit about it, there still wasn't that much.
Well, they need a super majority to put it out forward as a constitutional amendment.
Yeah,
and there are only two other ballot propositions. One is a bonding proposition. The other is from the new state archive library type situation. And that, I mean, I'm sure has been discussed vigorously in Juneau, but I don't even think I've seen a single letter to the editor on either one of those.
Proposition.
So you're going to tell me you did a story?
We will. We will certainly do that. But Proposition B actually has some media. And Proposition B is a capital projects
appropriation.
Appropriation, yes. It's building schools. It's something for everybody. They did a smart job with this. They did a smart thing with this. And they've spread it out for every region of the state to get something. But it's basically to improve education through new facilities, upgraded facilities, some schools in the bush, some stuff for UAA,
While there's significant money in there, there isn't a long list of these propositions. It's pretty clear to me that the legislature realized that, you know, times being what they are, they had to handle this very carefully.
Yeah, and yes, that's true. One of the things that's on the media ad is it's going to create 6,000 new jobs, or 6,000 jobs in the state. So that's a smart thing to say.
Here's something, Steve, we don't see every day. District Judge Richard Postma is in a dispute with the Alaska Judicial Council, which has recommended that he not be retained.
Yeah.
And we've seen dueling compass pieces in the Anchorage Daily News and other media coverage of it. It's pretty unusual, wouldn't you say?
It really is. First of all, Michael, I think this is the second time the Judicial Council has recommended against retaining a judge since like 1988. The Judicial Council was created by the Alaska Constitution to review the performance of judges, and obviously normally it always says retain these judges, but in this case with Judge Postma, they've said no, he's not fit to retain his spot on the bench. You had a compass piece in the Anchorage Daily News.
Larry Cohn of the council.
The executive director of the council. I think it was October 8th that he wrote this piece and painted a very bleak picture of Judge Postma's performance in behind the bench and off
Not
the bench.
Not to mention the emails
in the middle of the night that he sent to other judges, to the point where they had to actually change the security code to keep him from coming in to the judges' area where they had their offices. Judge Postma just a couple of days ago wrote his own compass piece and totaled 180 degrees the opposite way. He talked about how he had gotten great scores and his performance and integrity and timing and upholding the law, things like that. Other judges sing his praises, attorneys, public safety people who deal with him. So it is very different.
And anybody did on the, if you go to the ballot guide or the voter's guide, you will see that he did get some low marks from court employees and people around the courthouse.
Yeah.
Paul, this sort of reminds me of the old Ring Lardner story about the Washington Senators played a doubleheader yesterday, the one that was in the Washington Star and the one I saw. How do voters make up their mind when confronted with contradiction? I mean, it's very unusual because unless you're in the judge's courtroom, you don't have any personal experience.
No, it's 180 degrees out, the two stories.
That's it.
It's not like, well, we just disagree on how mean I was on Tuesday. This was like, you know, you're this way and you're that way. And so I don't know. It would seem to me that the voters are going to be confused on this one. I think there's a certain percentage.
And there's probably 30% who'll just vote against any
judge. There's a certain percentage to vote no every time. See you, and it doesn't. Yeah. This guy, I don't know. It's fairly confusing. You either trust the institution and the people in the institution, or you believe the judge.
And the problem the institution has is we're the people who approved him to begin with.
That's right.
Oops.
So I don't know. Well, I mean,
they're fully aware of that.
There's an irony there. Yeah, if I like that. But I don't know how they make up their minds. I wouldn't have a clue. Well,
this is one of those things on the ballots where people go down, all these judges, I don't know who these guys are. Or yes.
Yeah.
No, whatever it is, you know, so.
And I think there's, when you have a number of judges, there's usually a, 2-5% drop off where people just get tired of either voting yes or
vote
no.
For all.
Usually the person who's at the bottom will get less.
Yeah, right.
Less attention.
They're not
going
to.
Steve, we got a couple minutes here. We do have time for a little bit more on the U.S. Senate race. And big story today: major entities in Alaska, the NEA, Native organizations, and others have raised $500,000 on behalf of Lisa Murkowski to advertise for. Seems to me this is kind of a two-edged sword. On the one hand, she could use the money in the advertising. But it might remind some people why they're nervous about her.
Yeah, I think you're talking about all these big groups and, insiders and incumbents.
Firefighters
and
was another one.
Yeah. But it just shows you what's at stake here. We've got a lot of, at least most of these folks are all inside Alaska. There are a lot of folks from outside of Alaska who are also posting up here and putting money into the race. And
on the other hand, Paul, if somebody gives you a couple $100,000, at the very least, you're returning their phone calls.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Now, you could ask Joe Miller if it'll do any good. I mean, he had $600,000 almost pumped into his primary.
Although he
campaign.
Didn't get the money personally, he would remind you of that, and so would
right.
the Tea Party.
Well, sure, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Although now he's getting all kinds of money.
Well, of course. But the Tea Party Express pumped about $500,000, a little bit better than $600,000, into the primary race in the last few weeks, and that made a heck of a difference. And you put in $550,000 the last 2 or 3 weeks, if you can even find media to buy at this late date.
And you've put in the last word because we're out of town. Thank you for joining us. I'll be away next week. I will see you on the 29th for our last show before the election. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.